Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
How was your weekend? Talk to me.
And weekend was great. Anytime when there's a ton of boxing, I am very, very happy. So it was a solid weekend for boxing fans all around the world.
Seriously, all around the world. Australia, fight cards in Australia. Literally. You had the early one with Liam Paro and Scott Nicholson getting wins. And then you had Haney Kambosos at night over in Australia. Go to the UK, one of the biggest women's doubleheaders of all time. 2 million viewers for that one. The sold out the O2 Arena, the biggest, you know, all sorts of records there. Then Barclays Center, where me and Ronnie were for Deontay Wilder's destruction of Robert Helenius. So that was like your boxing day. And if you take a look at the upcoming schedule, if you're going to look at November, just kind of peek at it and don't really study it, because there's not a lot of fights on the schedule in November. Hopefully that picks up. But yeah, this past Saturday was nuts. I did a quick recap podcast. It's still out there for like some, you know, deep cuts on what we saw this past weekend. But I want to get your thoughts on this weekend in boxing. What was the biggest statement, in your opinion, out of those four fight cards? Who made the biggest statement?
Man, so I'm biased because I got the call up, but I think you know, Haney really made a statement for the lightweight division, and he's knocking on that pound for pound door. Like, I thought he looked great, and I said on the air that he needs to not only win and win impressively, he's got to do something special. Right. And I thought he did. I thought he made the fight. He was this close to stopping Kambosos. If he would have, that would have been huge. But that was really close. But then, you know, Wilder does what Wilder does. You know, in crazy knockout, completely ices the Viking, and then, you know, this is great for the ladies. I think Clarissa also, you know, she made a statement of herself. You know, I thought she looked fantastic. So, I'm gonna go with Haney.
Right, Haney. Oh, I think all the winners made huge statements. It's like one thing to win, but to win in style would have been nice if Haney did get like a big knockout. It would have been like kind of like a Shakur thing we saw with Conceição. Like, get that knockout, get that statement win. But he won, he moves on, he gets out of Australia twice, a lot of respect now, all four belts, all that and the other. Caleb Plant, huge statement. I mean, who picked him to knock out Durrell? I didn't. I mean, I thought that Haney might be able to stop Kambosos late. Did not see Caleb Plant getting a knockout win. While we're on the topic, what did you make of the celebration, the digging of the grave, which went insane viral on my Twitter? It's like 5 million views. I crossed over into like all sports and not just sports, but what'd you make of the digging of the grave?
You know, I'm not a fan of that because it is such a dangerous sport and we do lose guys all the time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, those guys had a lot of trash talk going on before the fight. And, you know, after a fight, especially immediately after, especially when you win emphatically like that, emotions are running high. Yeah. So I don't know how much we can really hold it to him. But ultimately, I think that's in poor taste.
Right. And he says the reason why I did it was I was burying the beef. I think that was a pretty good PR. Good thing to
good
say.
Good
there.
Cover up.
But there was a lot of trash talk before this fight. And there was a lot. You know, Durrell got under Plant's skin. And skin color, unfortunately, was a big part of this. He talked about, Durrell said, I'll never lose to a white boy. I mean, Bernard Hopkins made that statement very famous a few years back. I'll never lose to a white boy. And then after the fight, Durrell says, I never said that. Like, I'll give you $10,000 to anyone who can find me saying that. And the internet did its thing. Like, 10 minutes later, they found the thing where he said, I'll never let a white boy beat me. It's like, as much as you want to say like there's no race or no race issues in boxing, there 100% is. You know about that.
Oh, hell yeah. Of course. Man, the internet's undefeated. You can't put a statement out like that. He got a right back. But it is a thing, unfortunately. But, you know, it's like I said, emotions run high in this game. And you can say whatever you can to get under a guy's skin. It's a fight, man. There's almost no rules.
Yeah, so Caleb Plant gets the win, which is most important. All the other stuff is you know, extracurricular activities. And then I put on Twitter, like, I want to see Caleb Plant fight Benavidez. I think everyone wants to see that fight. It's been marinating for like 3 years now. They're both at the same weight class. They're both under the same banner. They're both, you know, former champions, current champions, all that and the other. But then I see that David Benavidez has a fight scheduled for January with Jose Uzcategui. And my initial reaction was I'm pissed off because Benavidez is so good. And you and I both love his ability. You cannot knock his in-ring ability. But now this is like 4 or 5 fights in a row where he's like a plus 1,000 favorite. I mean, this is not good. It's not good for him. I think he's wasting some of his prime years. Yes, he'll probably get a spectacular knockout. But it's like the third or fourth fight in a row now where on like press week for Benavidez, he's saying the same things like, oh, I can't look past a tough opponent. I really want the bigger names. And, well, you know, I'll probably, yeah, but that's that and the other. It's just like another where we know it's going to happen. We know it's going to be a win. And on top of it, it's coming in January. So we got to wait, too. So I was a little upset not to see Plant Benavidez at least like get into negotiations or somewhat of a talk for that one. Benavidez Uzcategui in January.
Yeah, and it being in January pushes back the option for the Caleb Benavidez fight even that much further because you're going to have recovery after the fight depending on how the fight goes. But either way, I mean, you're looking at these guys aren't going to fight for another 8 months to a year, if at all. But yeah, I agree with you. I think that's the fight that needs to be made. I think the Caleb Plant Benavidez fight is an important fight, and I think it'll actually be a good one. I think it's you know, stylistically, it's a great matchup. But in terms of Uzcategui, it leaves room for Benavidez to make another statement, not that he really needs it, but if he blasts out Uzcategui, which I think he actually will, I think that's a massive statement because he gave Caleb Plant hell toward the end of that fight when they fought. Incredible performance by Caleb Plant. I was really impressed with that fight, but I think that if Benavidez goes out there and blows him out and makes it look spectacular, yeah, I think that's a major statement.
Dude, the only thing with Uzcategui, that was like 2019. And yeah, since then he's popped for steroids. I mean, this they were supposed to fight in last year, and he failed the PED test, so they reward him again with another chance at Benavidez. The whole thing stinks. Like, there's no way to slice it. It stinks. I mean, Benavidez should be fighting Plant. Now, we have to wait till, like you said, January. We have to wait at least 6 months. So we're looking at next summer, next fall for Plant Benavidez, and then you have to figure if Canelo does come back. You know that Benavidez wants a piece of Canelo. He's playing the mandatory game over at 168. This puts him in a better chance for it to be the mandatory for Canelo, should Canelo, you know, come back in May. So that's one fight that was made to come out of this Plant Benavidez and Plant Durrell win. Ronnie, you were in attendance at Barclays Center.
First time.
What did you make of it? I know we're walking through the corridors. You're like, wow, this doesn't look like the average like sports crowd. It's not.
It was an energy that I've never experienced before, but it was definitely like, oh yeah, we're at a fight. It felt aggressive.
Yeah, definitely not a lot of kids walking around.
No,
not a lot of cotton candy.
Fight dark. Night in the arena is nothing like it. I tell everyone who's never been to a live fight, like, you have to go to a live fight. There's nothing like it.
Especially Barclays, like on a nice fall night, New York City, Deontay Wilder in the ring, and there was definitely a buzz, but it was pretty excitement, right?
Yeah, it was like electricity was in the air. Even it was when we got there, it was like the undercard fights.
Yeah, it was like 7:38.
But still, even though like the lighting inside, just the theatrics of it, it's so cool.
Yeah, then the weed smoke comes in.
Dude, Ronnie's falling in love with boxing, man. Little by little, it's really starting to hit home.
You guys are watching it unfold.
Yeah, right before our eyes. Mm-hmm. Right before our eyes. You know, another thing that's happening right before our eyes is me becoming a Ridge Wallet man, Chris. They actually sent me one. Because I love this item that much. You know, a lot of times people come out and they do these ad reads for these companies or these products that they're probably never going to use or don't really like. I love the Ridge Wallet. Got my own right here. It holds up to 12 cards plus room for cash. See this? It's a Honda.
Whoa.
Because I'm winning all my bets. I'm not. Whoa. I lost my parlay.
Daddy Warbucks over here.
Lost my parlay, and I lost my against the spread pick. But we're talking about the Ridge Wallet, not about my bad betting. Over 30 colors, carbon fiber, burnt titanium. This one right here is the carbon fiber. Love it. How good is it? 50,000 five-star reviews. That's a lot of happy customers. Durable material means each wallet comes with a lifetime warranty. This thing ain't going nowhere. It's not fraying like my old wallet. Love this thing. The Ridge team is so confident that you'll like it. Let you test drive it for 45 days. You can send it back for a full refund if you don't Love it. Check out the link in the description and use code JOMBOY for 10% off. That is the Ridgewild. Use code JOMBOY for 10% off. Holidays are coming up. Perfect gift for anyone out there. All right. Also at the Barclays Center, Deontay Wilder, one punch knockout. He landed three punches in total, Chris. What was your initial reaction from Deontay Wilder? I love that he's back, saying all the right things, showing a lot of humility afterwards, a different side of him. This is like Deontay Wilder 2.0.
Yeah, well, we said, I mean, the heavyweight division's healthy when Deontay Wilder's fighting, you know, and it's because of this reason, exactly that. Listen, Helenius is a tough SOB, man. He gave Adam Konacki, who was a very, very tough contender in the heavyweight division, hell for two fights, got rid of him both times. And for him to come in here and get starched with pretty much the second or third punch that he got hit with is wild. I mean, starched. He was laid out looking this guy. You know, incredible. Wilder's just, he is that guy. He's still that guy.
Yeah, he looked phenomenal. A lot of people talking about he took a dive. I can't stand the dive stuff. Ron, I think we're having no sound again.
That can't be.
We're getting in the comments. Casey Delamonte says, silence, but I bet you're having a fire conversation, though.
How?
That's our guy.
I don't know how.
We have levels come through.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 2 weeks in a row. Bad news. We were making great points. Like, we do have the audio.
Audio isn't working. I mean, I guess it was working, now it's not?
Can you hear us now?
No, it was working. People were talking about.
I'm getting good levels, everything.
No, it was working because Jay Foreman said nobody's interested in Benavidez versus Usyk Kotecki. Yeah. Audio isn't working. It was, then it cut out completely. Jay Foreman said nobody's interested in Benavidez, Usyk Kotecki. Benavidez didn't even try to see the plant fight.
Okay.
So we got that part. That was like 5 minutes ago. Jax fan says no. Blue Johnny Arupta says no.
Check. How about now?
1, 2. Can you hear us now, everybody? Give me some. Talk to us in the chat. Can you hear us?
Thumbs up in the chat if you can hear us.
Can you hear us? No.
Wait. All right. This next comment is going to be huge.
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
Wilder.
It was Wilder. Yep, there we go.
We're good? We're back? We're back!
Yeah.
And we're back. Deontay Wilder is back, too. I want to make sure we got that Ridge Wallet read, though. We got that, right?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Okay, good. Deontay Wilder's back, Chris. Three punches. A lot of people talk about a dive. Hate that crowd. Probably my least favorite boxing crowd there is the he took a dive crowd. It sounded like a damn gunshot. And the way that he went down, Helenius, the way that he was on the ground, if he should not be boxing, he should be in acting then.
Right. Get him in Academy Award. Put him in every knockout scene there is in every movie. He should be in Creed, you know, 4 through 10.
Yeah.
Come on. He got hit right in his chin, too, by a guy who is a legitimately one of the best single punch punchers who's ever lived.
Yeah, so that I hate that crowd. I hate to even give them any give that crowd any attention. But Deontay Wilder is back. That's what's most important. He's probably going to fight Ruiz. Andy Ruiz is the mandatory. It's a fight that can easily be made inside the PBC walls. Cinco de Mayo, perfect fight for Vegas, perfect fight for L.A. Wilder versus Ruiz is interesting because Ruiz has the speed. Hand speed, he can get in and out. That usually gives Wilder issues. But what we've seen over the last couple of years with Ruiz is the punch resistance is kind of gone, not fully gone. And his defense, while good, there are some holes there. So I can see Wilder landing a massive right and doing something that no one's been able to do to Ruiz is knock him out.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it happens pretty early. I think that I'm having shades of Chris Arreola dropping Ruiz with a shot behind the ear, and I can't imagine if Wilder lands one of those, and the chances of him landing it are pretty high, especially early on.
Yeah, so that's what's coming out of the heavyweight division. Do we talk about this fight that's just been announced today? That's a press conference going on right now. Fury versus Derek Chisora for the third time. I put on Twitter, give me one word to sum up Chisora Fury. Ass, as one person said. Throwing up emoji, irrelevant, why, boxing, ma, ass, another ass, sad, waste, why, shit, waste, joke, gross, disgraceful, cash grab, shambolic, tedious, nauseating, unnecessary, waste, cobblers, don't know that word, fraud, useless, not another one, concussion, that's three words, pointless, disgraceful, you get the point. A fight that no one really wanted, a fight that kind of stinks of a friend giving another friend a payday. They fought two times already. I'll give you a stat right here. I'm a stat guy. Tyson Fury outlanded Chisora in 21 of their 22 rounds that they fought. 436 to 168. That's 4-1, folks. Why are we seeing this?
Who cares? I mean, the second fight probably didn't need to happen. The third one, forget it. Yeah, I don't know. Especially the timing of it. It stinks. It stinks.
It stinks to the high heavens. And Warren today is saying, listen, the Joshua stuff was a waste of time. We weren't able to get a fight done with Joshua. Joyce just fought. Go down the list. Dillian White, we already beat him. Usyk says he doesn't want to fight until the spring. So we went on BoxRec, which BoxRec is a great tool, but their rankings are weird. They use like an algorithm.
Weird.
It's not it's not people choosing. It's not like a panel, like the Ring magazine or whoever ratings that you like. It's literally an algorithm made by a computer. So for him to say we went to BoxRec right there, I love BoxRec, don't get me wrong, but that's not a great excuse or great explanation or justification for this fight. And he was the highest rated contender at heavyweight, so we're giving him the third fight. I mean, it is a waste of time. Fury back is good. Him active is good. And what the sad thing is with boxing is you're going to watch. You know, you're like a cinephile when you're a boxing fan. You watch everything. A cinephile watches every movie there is. So if you're a boxing fan, you don't really have a lot of options out there. There isn't no other league or, oh, I'm going to shut it off. You watch everything because there isn't a lot of fights twice a year our favorite fighters fight. So people will watch. It's going to be on regular ESPN or ESPN Plus here in the States. It's a pay-per-view over in the UK. That sucks for people in the UK, but... Right, Chris? Like, people are going to watch, which is kind of like, I hate to justify it and I hate to give them that, but it's Tyson Fury and we don't get a lot of big fights, so we'll watch it.
People are going to watch. I'm going to watch. You're going to watch. We're all going to watch. I mean, it's Tyson Fury. He is one of the most entertaining heavyweights that we've seen in generations. So we're definitely going to tune in, but it is what it is. You know, these are the issues that we have with boxing. We can talk about it until we're blue in the face, what needs to change. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, these guys can make money doing it and they know it, and it's a safe fight for Tyson and where he's going to be going in his next couple fights. So yeah, it is what it is. It still sucks. It still stinks.
Yeah. He's going to win. He's going to knock him out. You know, Chisora might have a round where he kind of empties the tank and maybe can land something to the body on Fury. Don't see him landing much. If this leads to a Fury Usyk in the spring, then maybe you can swallow it a little bit better. But, you know, for a December fight, I can see – I don't want to talk myself into it because I think it's trash. But we're going to see Tyson Fury in the ring. I know a lot of people are going to watch. Casey De La Monte says, Chisora beating Fury will literally be the biggest upset in boxing. That's how pointless fight is. I don't know. I still think Buster Douglas holds that distinction, right, Chris? 42-1?
Yeah. I mean, that is the literal definition of the
It's up
of
there,
the
though. Would you give Chisora – is there any path for Chisora to win this besides land that, you know, lucky punch?
No, zero. And even the lucky punch, I mean, Wilder has landed multiple not lucky punches on Fury, put him down, and the guy gets up. Like, so I don't see any way for Chisora to win this fight. He's a wide-swinging guy anyway. I mean, his punches come from yesterday. So yeah. No way it's Tyson, who actually has great defense and a chin and heart.
Right. I agree. We're going to watch, but it's also we kind of know the conclusion of that one. Before we get into, we got mailbag questions. We got best five movies of all time. There was one fight we did not talk about this past week. I want to quickly get your thoughts. It was probably the most controversial fight of the weekend, or the fight that had people choosing sides on who they thought won. That was Meyer and Bumgarner. I personally had it 6-4. Bumgarner could easily be 7-3. I know you were calling a fight for Haney Cambosis. You weren't able to watch it live, but you did watch it. Who do you think won that fight between Meyer and Bumgarner?
I actually just watched it about an hour ago this morning while I was on the bike, and I had Bumgarner winning. Same score, 6-4, 7-3. She just fought a very smart fight, and Meyer just... She didn't fight like herself. She wasn't as busy as she normally is. She wasn't really pumping that jab. When she did, those are the rounds I gave her. She got behind her jab, was double tripling it up, mixing things up nice, but she just didn't do enough of that. And we spoke about this. I thought that she was going to be, you know, the one fighter out of all of those ladies who was going to be affected by the fight being pushed back and being overtrained. And it kind of looked like that, that way. She looked a little flat. She looked a little listless. But, man, I tip my hat to Baumgartner. She fought awesome. She looked great.
Yeah, and Nostradamus, Chris Algieri, go back and watch last week's episode. You said it. If there was one fighter that was going to suffer a little bit from the delay and having to make the weight, it's the bigger Michaela Meyer. And I don't know if that's the reason she came out slow in the first two rounds, or was maybe because of she was a little bit worried of the power of Baumgartner, tasted a few of those right hands early. But I thought Baumgartner did something spectacular in there. She was jabbing to the body first and then eventually going up top, you know, trying to find, don't punch where you think they're going to be. Punch it, you know, go to the stomach first, go to the chest early, and then you go up top after. I thought Baumgartner was just loose. She was having fun in there. She was smiling. I don't know that you don't really say that too often, but I thought she did enough to win those early rounds, and I thought she won some of those later rounds. I think Meyer's going to kick herself for starting slow, because in boxing, women's boxing in particular, 10 2-minute rounds does not afford yourself to start slow. You simply can't start slow because it's not a lot of ground to make up.
Let's change this 2-minute thing. I mean, come on, 10 twos for a world title fight is just it's
nonsense. How about 12 twos?
Not even that. Like 12 threes. Why not? That's good. 3-minute rounds, 12 rounds. Why is it any different? It's the same sport. We're talking. It's boxing.
There's a lot of junk science out there. There's a lot of junk science out there from the WBC saying why they haven't made it 3-minute rounds.
Yeah, no, I mean, let me read that science. I will debunk it immediately.
Well, one of our friends, Lou DeBella, anytime I mention 3-minute rounds, I get a call from him. Anytime I tweet about it, women's boxing should be 3-minute rounds. Because his theory was it's hard enough for these women's fights to get televised. Not every fight is Shields Marshall. Not every fight is Taylor Serrano. Not every fight is Meyer Baumgartner.
There isn't
a big thirst for it. So how about we make it 20 minutes so that it lends itself to more excitement. It's easier for these networks to sign off on them. But then you can't, nitpick. You can't just want one fight to be 12 3-minute rounds like Taylor Serrano and the ones we saw this weekend, but maybe not have a less exciting one be 36 minutes where you're kind of like, oh, man, it's not going to heat up anytime soon. So I understand that aspect of it. What do you think of that?
But which is it? Is it science or is it network? You know, is it for views or is it because of,
Both, maybe.
We've got physiological difference. Come on. I mean, physiological difference is one thing. You know, that other point about, viewership is another. I mean, but things are changing. People actually want to watch women's fights now. You know, you said 2 million views on the fight this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously things are changing, and I think eventually it will change. But maybe 12 twos would be a good start.
Yeah, let's move forward, right? There's a lot of women's boxing out there. I mean, they're having a moment. This is their year. Let's revolutionize it. Let's find some good science. Let's figure out a way to make it 12-3 because they're going to keep getting better. Women are going to keep getting better. We're seeing it right in front of our eyes. So eventually, like, all these fights are going to be better. So you might as well make these big fights 36 minutes, because I know you're watching today. It's like they were so quick. Like, the rounds were over before you even knew. There were 30 seconds left in every round by the time you look down. So
I have a hard time calling women's fights because of that. Because normally when I'm calling for ESPN, I'm calling and I'm also scoring, which is hard, which you shouldn't be doing anyway. But trying to score a two minute round while speaking about the round, nearly impossible.
Yeah, so we're getting to the chat. Diego Hernandez, after the fourth round, Baumgartner wasn't even fighting her own fight. She switched to fight the fight Meyer was dictating. Meyer lost, says Cozy Rito. I had Alicia winning 6-4, 7-3. Can you guys talk about the Tony Harrison addition helping Baumgartner game plan? Yeah, I said that on my the reaction pod. Harrison has been awesome for Baumgartner.
Yeah.
Telling her to jab to the body early on, I thought was a brilliant move because it opened up a lot of her game plan here. George Costanza, not the George Costanza.
No way.
George Costanza's in the chat from Queens. I think 2-minute rounds are more exciting, accessible, less dancing around fighters. Yeah, it's kind of like bare knuckle boxing is 2-minute rounds, and they start in the middle of the ring. Like, it's a little bit of a gimmick, but it does lead itself to more exciting fights. DeBella has made some of the best fights in the world. He was a former executive. He knows how it works, and we've gotten to some passionate arguments with Lou DeBella. But I got to do this Ridge Wallet read again. But I love talking about the Ridge Wallet. I'll talk about it all day. I'll talk about it for an hour on this show. I'll pop every card right out of here just like that. I got a Visa. I got an American Express. I got a AAA card.
Let's see those numbers on those cards.
Yeah. But no one zoom into those numbers. Don't read my stuff. I don't want anyone extorting me besides our guy here, Steve. He's the main.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Ridge Wallet, love it. Holds up to 12 cards. I got four. It can hold 12 more, plus room for cash. Got a hundo in there. 30 colors, including carbon fiber. This is carbon fiber right here. Love it. They sent me one. I love this thing right here. 50,000 five-star reviews. That's a lot of five-star reviews for us. So you know the product is really good, durable material, lifetime warranty. So you're going to have this thing for 60 years. At the end, be like, didn't like it. Get your money back. Don't do that, because you're not going to have to do that. The Ridge team is so confident you'll like it, they'll let you test drive it for 45 days. You can send it back for a full refund if you don't love it, but you will love it. Check out the link in the description and use code JOHNBOY for 10% off your Ridge wallet. Okay, let's get into our best boxing movies of all time. Here we go. Creed 3 trailer came out yesterday. Canelo Alvarez is in it. Tony Bellew is in it. Jose Benavidez is in it. I said, is that Jose Benavidez? I think the new Creed opponent knocks out. Spoiler, but it's in the trailer. Knocks him out. So with that being said, we do a list every single week. Best boxing movies of all time. How should we do this, Ryan? Should we just give our five, go back and forth?
I say give your five and discuss any overlaps or any differences.
Anybody have a coin?
I have a Siri.
Okay. We'll figure out who will go first.
All right. What are you calling?
I'm calling heads.
Flip a coin.
Siri. I didn't know you could do this. Ah, Chris, you have the floor. Please give us your five best boxing movies of all time.
Yeah, we're gonna preface it. This is my five. This is the movies that are special to me, and they're in that order for that reason. Number five, Cinderella Man. So it was an awesome movie, great story. The only reason it's so low on my list is I don't love that era of boxing. Just the styles are very different. And the fight scenes are a little slow because they're a heavier weight. But, I mean, great story, excellent movie. And what's his name? The actor is incredible.
Russell Crowe.
Mm-hmm. Number four, The Hurricane, which I don't know if everyone really considers this a boxing movie. I mean, it's about real events when the guy was a boxer, and I love the scenes that are in the movie, you know, that are around boxing, but also just tells a great story. And Denzel Washington, absolutely incredible actor, yeah, one of the best that we've ever seen in our generation.
This is the story of a hurricane.
Dun, dun. That's going to be in my head for the rest of the day. Yep. Thank you, Dan. Number three, I have the original Rocky. It is so nostalgic for me. I love the storyline. I love the idea of, you know, the down and out pug, which a lot of people forget. Rocky had a bunch of losses. He wasn't like some undefeated guy and coming up. Like, he was literally a journeyman and had multiple double digit losses and came back and fought for the title. And yeah, I believe, you know, the Chuck Wepner idea was definitely in there. But it just, and also what it's done for the world of boxing. I mean, that was literally transcended movies and brought people to the sport and still mm-hmm. does. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Number two, an oldie, The Setup, which is a really, really cool storyline about a fighter who wants to have one more fight. And his wife is like, no, it's too dangerous. Stay away. He's like, no, this money will help. This money will help us with the, you know, with this or with that. And his manager sets him up because he doesn't believe in him. He's going to lose. So he bets the house against him.
I love that.
It's great. And it's honestly actually the Bruce Willis played the boxer in that great movie, that Tarantino movie.
Which one was that? I think I saw it on Netflix the other day.
Well, no, it's a Tarantino classic. Ronnie, help me out here.
I mean, you're
give me more clues.
Grasping at straws right now.
Give me more clues.
I mean, everybody's in it. Uma Thurman.
Kill Bill?
No. The other one. I can't believe I'm blanking. It's one of my movies, too.
It's pissing me off now.
Django.
Yeah.
Tarantino. It's a Quentin Tarantino movie with Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis.
Anyone
Uma Thurman.
In the chat know it? Yeah. Pulp Fiction?
It's not Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
No way. Wow. I said Pulp Fiction.
Drew yeah, got Pulp it. Fiction. Dr. Ruben got it.
So Pulp Fiction, the boxer plays a boxer. It's basically that story. Okay. He's got the one fight. The guy is supposed to throw it and he doesn't, right. And then he escapes out the back. So it's very similar to the movie The Setup. And mm-hmm. I love that storyline. And the number one for me is always Raging Bull. It's not only my favorite boxing movie, it's my favorite movie of all time. Wow. It hits so close to home in terms of the stuff outside of the ring. Mm-hmm. The flipping over the table because you overdid the stake. Why'd you set me up for this fight? I got to cut this weight. He's just pissed and he's angry and he walks around. He's got a chip on his shoulder. That is what coming up as a boxer who is not one of those prize guys is like. That's the way I grew up. I had a chip on my shoulder throughout my entire 20s because I never thought I was going to be where I was supposed to be. And I wasn't where I thought I should have been. So that one speaks really true to me. Plus being just an angry bastard cutting weight. I love that.
Good list, man. Cinderella Man, Hurricane, Rocky won the setup, Raging Bull. Something big just happened outside our office.
Huge.
I'll tell you what, that is a deep cut top five. You're going to appeal to a lot of the hardcores, a lot of the I don't know if there's any older folk on Twitter, but you're going to get a lot of those. I'm going to give you mine. My best boxing movies of all time. Number five, Million Dollar Baby. Love this movie. Doesn't have a lot of boxing in it, but it is definitely a boxing movie. Obviously, Hilary Swank, spoiler, close your ears if you've never seen it, becomes basically a vegetable, injures herself in a fight. The trainer takes that father role. How many times have you seen in boxing a father taking or trainer taking the father role? Love this movie. That's number five, Million Dollar Baby. Number four, Raging Bull. You have to have it on your list. Scorsese, De Niro, Joe Pesci, all the reasons that you just listed there too. Just a great film, great movie, let alone a boxing movie. It is an all-time classic. Obviously, I'm going to have Raging Bull at number four. Let's go over to number three. I got The Fighter, the story of Mickey Ward. Obviously,
excellent movie.
I mean, you got Mark Wahlberg. You got Dickie Eklund, played by Christian Bale. You got all the Mickey Ward sisters. I think Conan O'Brien's sister was one of the many sisters of Mickey Ward in that movie. I thought it was so realistic. They used the HBO graphics. The fight scenes were really good. A lot of times in these boxing movies, the fight scenes are just awful, and they're so unrealistic that you're just like, ugh, what the heck is going on here? You roll your eyes if you're a boxing fan, but I think The Fighter was so good.
My number six, actually. That just missed the list.
You always got your honorable mention. But The Fighter, for me, obviously grew up in that era of watching Mickey Ward. And I love that they don't really show the Gotti fight. They kind of prelude to it. It ends with him landing that body shot over in England, finally winning, getting that big win. Love that movie. Thought it was phenomenal. Number two, I got to give at least one Rocky on here. Rocky 1 obviously means so much. It started off a franchise, and we're getting reboots, three reboots now to today. So it's 60, 70 years of excellence. So I'm going Rocky 4. I think Rocky 1, you have Rocky 1 on there. We have it represented. I'm going Rocky 4. Anytime you could end the Cold War on Christmas night like Rocky did, beating Drago. I mean, it's got to go into my list. I mean, that's political stuff. We're crossing over. It's the best of the Rocky movies, in my opinion. Rocky 1, it's more of it's more of a drama. It won Best Picture.
It's a film. Yeah, it's a film.
It won Best Picture
Rocky
and then it had in there.
Yeah, Rocky IV also has the best training montage of any of the Rockies by a lot. That's my favorite one to watch. If I had to watch, if I could just any day in time pick a Rocky movie, it's Rocky IV.
Exactly. So, yeah. So, Rocky, we got both our Rockies on there. So don't,
is that the best fourth iteration of a movie ever? Not that many fours.
What other fours are out there?
Shrek 4?
Hangover 3 was fucking movies. Awful. So, yeah, there's not that many four movies out there. Creed, I'm sure Creed's in there.
I feel like Halloween 4 was probably good. I think, or Nightmare on Elm Street, one of those. One of those had a good, run in the middle.
But Rocky 4 was the last of, the main Rockies. Then it went haywire. Rocky 5 was bad.
Fast and Furious
4. Rocky Balboa, despite Lou. This is a big Lou episode. Lou being in Rocky 5. CompuBox stats were in Rocky Balboa. He mentioned them. My dad, they shot it at a fight, and Rocky was, not Rocky, Sylvester Stallone was standing over there. My dad went up to him, hey, how you doing? Bob Kenobi of CompuBox. You really want to make this movie realistic. Got to have some CompuBox stats in it.
He pitched him.
He just nods his head and points at someone, and they run over, and they give him some stats, and Lampley reads them. So that's pretty cool. But that's number two. Number one for me, this is just me, okay? This doesn't have to be your list. This is just my list. Creed. The original Michael B. Jordan vehicle, directed by Ryan Coogler. One of the most realistic fight scenes in there. One of the most realistic stories. How many times have we heard fighters going over to Tijuana to pad their record early? Devin Haney did it himself. Comes back, doesn't go for that big fight right away. Fights the local guy. Has the name, obviously, because of his dad. We see that in boxing all the time. Nepotism, where we've seen a fight blew up just last week between two sons of legends. So you can get a fast track yourself in boxing if you have a name. And I just thought it was, the storyline was phenomenal. The second one I thought was lacking. The first Creed movie is so freaking good. I'm excited about the third one. That's coming out soon. Canelo's in it. Some other notables. But that's my list. Cinderella Man, Hurricane, Rocky 1. No, that's your list. My list is Million Dollar Baby, Raging Bull, The Fighter, Rocky 4, and Creed. Let's go over to the chat. Creed 3 trailer was hype, says Cozy. Jay Foreman, I forgot about Million Dollar Baby. Really good. Johnny Akparanta, just butchered his name. His top five: Southpaw, Creed, Rocky 1, Hurricane, and The Fighter. Good list. Jay Foreman, Christian Bale was amazing in that movie. Yes, he was. The Rocky ending the Cold War is completely factual. Can't tell us Philadelphians any different. This is true. People in Philadelphia think that Rocky's like a legitimate person. Like, he's a real guy.
Well, I thought there
is a statue of him. So
yeah, there is a statue of a fictional character. Whole city. Who said that? Eddie Murphy. Whole city rallying around a fictional character.
I thought Rocky Balboa was based on a true story.
It is. Chuck Wepner.
I mean, technically it is.
The Bayonne Bleeder.
Oh, I thought Rocky Balboa was an actual fighter that, like, fought.
Ronnie's never seen Rocky.
I've never seen any of the Rocky movies, so.
That's blasphemy. We need to put him in a room and just make him watch all of them in a row.
Yeah, I mean.
You should. You and your lady. Like, pop it in. After the World Series. Whoa, that sounded, I went to that. Clip that out right there.
Clip it.
This show's going off the rails.
Sure.
You and your companion put on the movie after Yankees win the World Series, and you know, need something to watch in November. It's something to get us, you know, through those months.
Yeah, it's gonna be cold.
You got one, two, three. You have like, you could probably watch one a week, and it'll get you to the spring.
Yeah. You know what? I might do that actually. Yeah.
There you go. I feel like they show too much of the plot, says Dr. Rubin in Creed 3 trailer. Yeah, I agree. they give away a lot in that trailer, but I'll still go
see
it.
That's why I didn't watch it. I hate that. I hate when they give you too much in the preview.
Yeah, that's what one of our guys here, Tom Prizeman, said. I'm not watching it because I want to go in fresh.
Yeah, that's hell yeah.
Seinfeld. That's a Seinfeld thing there. All right, let's end the show with our mailbag. Thank you to everyone who... gave a lot of questions, some good ones in there too. Ronnie, do you have the mailbag?
I have a mailbag. Soon enough, we'll get a "You Got Mail" type.
Yes,
we have excellent listeners. These people are very, very knowledgeable. Yes. Always have great input.
Yeah, chat is lit right now. Appreciate that.
To start things off, we have Renee Box Young, and he asks, "What chances do you see Joyce beating Usyk or Fury?"
Chris is the resident non-believer in Joe Joyce. I'm a little bit more of a believer in Joyce. I think he could take punches. I think he can take Fury's best punch. That's not even like a theory. He could 100% take punches. He can take Fury's best punch, I think. He can. Usyk, not exactly known as a hard puncher, but has already beat him in the amateurs, and they weren't even that young. I give Joyce a chance against anyone. Anyone that has that chin, that motor, really good jab, can beat any of these guys. I think he's in the top five. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, when the juggernaut, when you've got a chin like that, and dude, he's so busy. That's a problem. You got a guy that big and that athletic throwing punches at you and you can't hurt him. You know, that's interesting. But I think Usyk's just on a different level. He finds ways to win no matter what he has in front of him. And Tyson Fury is Tyson Fury. I think he's one of the baddest heavyweights that we've ever seen while I've been alive. And he's also got the size to deal with Joyce, you know, in terms of physically. But yeah, I mean, I think they could be good fights. I think Joyce is always going to be in a good fight. The guy gets hit a ton, and he's going to be there. So, but I don't see him beating either one of those guys.
Yeah, I like Joyce versus Wilder. That's what I want to see.
I like that one too. You got a guy who can knock anybody out against a guy whose chin is indestructible.
Need to see that science experiment sometime soon. Next question.
Next up, we have Fighting Words, who asks, Wilder versus Ruiz. How does that go?
Chris?
I got Wilder knockout, possibly early. I think it's one of those things. Ruiz is there to be hit. His punch resistance has gone down as of recently, and Wilder is hitting as hard as ever.
Johnny Akparanta says, do you guys ever see Bleed for this? Yes. I like that
one. Yeah. So who's the actor who plays
Miles Teller?
The trainer? No, oh, the trainer.
I don't know.
I got his name. He's in Thank You for Smoking. He's an excellent actor.
Oh, I know that guy. He played Rooney's dad, right?
He played Rooney. So he came to my training camp when I trained for Pacquiao to hang out with Rooney and to coach my sparring.
Oh, wow.
While he was next to Rooney. So Rooney could sound like his dad, and he would get an idea of what his dad sounded like when he was coaching.
That's so
cool.
We
got to hang out. We had dinner. Super, super cool guy.
He was in Dark Knight. He's turned the Two-Face.
Yes. He was Two-Face. Yeah, he was Two-Face.
I don't know his name, but we'll figure it out. All right, Ronnie, next question.
Lannister asks, had a debate with a coworker. Could you guys name your top five counterpunchers in boxing today? Keep up the great work, guys. Ooh. Love the pod. Chris is a great addition.
Wow. All right.
Thank you.
I like that part. I'm not going to go five, but I'll just name a few off the top of my head. Like, I like Canelo's great counterpuncher. What do you got, Chris?
Shakur is a great counterpuncher. Yeah. Fights off the back feet beautifully. Canelo was a good addition. Definitely good one there. Let me think.
It's a tough one. Ronnie, you got any?
Yeah, you got to really kind of think because
Usyk.
It's, yeah, Usyk, especially with his angles. When I think of a counterpunch, I think of someone who's really just like sitting, waiting, and just almost like a Diabolos Hurtado back in the day. He was a killer counterpuncher, and he would just wait. He would just wait for his opening, and he would just pull that trigger. Tank Davis, Canelo, Tank. Absolutely, that's a good one, Tank. Firing off that back foot.
Jermell Charlo.
Good one. I'm trying to think of last.
That would probably be my top. I mean, Tank throws 30 punches around and still knocks people out. Jermell Charlo is in the low 30s, still knocks people out. Canelo Alvarez in the low 30s in terms of punches thrown, still knocks people out. So those are counterpunches. Those are guys that are not aggressive. So that's the top three that comes to mind. I'm sure there's more. I'm sure there's, if I really got into the stats, but I mean, those are the top three, in my opinion, that can get away with that low volume and still, deliver knockouts.
I'm going to take this question home with me. I'm going to do some more work because it's a good question.
I saw it. It's a great question. I saw it, and I was kind of, like, distracted by the Yankee game last night because I was going to get my top five, but great one by Lannister. Next question.
Next up, we have David Kushkin. They called him the Kushman in high school.
Yeah, he's a big fan of ours. I love that guy.
Aside from Tank Ryan, what is the fight you'd like to see most amongst the 135 and 140 guys?
Did you see Shakur put out a tweet about the Super 6? He wishes there was a Super 6 for lightweights. I mean, any of these fights, I think you can make a case for why they're compelling. Like Tank versus Ryan, obviously. Haney versus Tank, which I think are the two best. Loma versus any of those guys makes for a really good fight. You guys got William Cepeda, you got Jojo Diaz, you got Isaac Cruz. That's at 135. At 140, it's loaded. You know, Josh Taylor, Zepeda, Ramirez,
Progray.
They're fighting at the end of November. Then you got Teofimo at 140. You got Subriel Matias at 140. You got Honorable Barboza. I mean, there is a shit ton of talent between 130 and 140 right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of always that case, right? Like 140 is always like a super talented deep division, but it's a tweener division, right? So you got 35 pounders coming up, and you got 40 pounders going up to 47. So it's all about when they overlap. And right now we're in a good overlapping phase. Guys like Teofimo moving up to 40. I don't know how much longer Jeff Taylor's going to be there. Ramirez, those guys seem like they're on their way out. Mm-hmm. But guys like Zepeda and Progray are really coming into their own in terms of maturity. And then you've got the 35 pounders, which is super deep and a lot of fun matchups there. I really like the Lomachenko-Haney fight. I think that stylistically Haney could give Loma trouble because of his size and the way he fights. But other than that, I mean, I still think Loma is the top dog. He's the guy that I think needs to get beaten in order to be the true undisputed.
You're going
to
get in trouble for that one. There's this weird anti-Loma sentiment among boxing fans. Like, a lot of people think he's overhyped. You know, they think he already has two losses. You know, ESPN's constantly, or Top Rank's constantly putting out those videos where he's punching tennis balls, he's touching different things, and we've had enough. You know, we've already seen him, you know, lay an egg against Teofimo in those first seven rounds. But I'm with you. I'm not ready to write off Lomachenko. I mean, he did way too much early on in his career to give him, like, the credit. You know what I mean? Like, he built up a lot of good credit where I still need to see him get like really beat, because I thought he
worked himself took a lot of chances in early in his career. He came right out the gate wanting world title fights. I mean, that that's wild to me to come out and try and fight for a world title in your second pro fight, and he wanted to fight for a world title in his first pro fight. You know, the guy's not afraid to lose. He takes risks. He goes out there. I appreciate guys like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and just and his talents, it's different. We don't see a guy like that. He makes it work. And say what you will about his style, he still gets stoppages. He still knocks guys out. Yeah. You know, he's not a puncher per se, but he's super accurate and he makes his punches count.
We got another one from Costanza.
Oh, yeah, our boy Costanza, who is in the chat, hopefully still listening. What type of analytics do boxers use in training camp?
Chris, you're the boxer, so you can take this one. I have analytics that we use too.
I'm big on heart rate monitors. I think that's really important, not only for, you know, in terms of your max heart rate, but your recovery between rounds. You know, they're so good now, like it's literally second by second. So I can see when I'm in a 3-minute round where my heart rate goes and how much it drops in the minute in between. So that's a big one for me. You know, obviously like the old school, just weighing yourself, but also body fat percentage, doing underwater weighing and DEXA scans like that. So you can figure out how much body fat you have, how much lean tissue you have. Mm-hmm. That way, you know exactly how much body fat you can pull to make the weight. Also hydration status, things like that. And then just, you know, regular testing that strength conditioning coaches will do, you know, in terms of, grip strength, max vertical jump, and then just strength as you're moving along with the weights and whatnot. Yeah. But, we're still a little old school with that kind of stuff. A lot of it is just going by feel.
You know, funny story way back when, Ray Leonard hired CompuBox to train and get him ready for the Hagler fight. They brought
that's cool.
A lot of these guys would bring in my dad and his former partner Logan Hobson at the time, because the numbers weren't accessible as they are now. So I remember he left and he went and he spent like 2 or 3 weeks with Leonard, advising or coming up with a game plan. And what they found was that Hagler started slow. He was a slow starter, and what did he do in that fight? Started slow.
Yeah.
Came out southpaw. So Leonard hopped on him quick, and then he would hop. And then I think Dundee came up with the game plan to flurry late, try to steal the rounds. But there isn't a lot of like pre-analytics. I don't know. Some trainers used to hit me up for Ben Davison. As a big fan of stats, he usually hits me up for numbers. But there's all that old school stuff, and now we can mesh in the numbers. I think there could be more done in terms of analytics in camp.
Well, they have those punch counters, you know, that can measure speed and pound. But I've used a couple of them. I'm not a big fan of any of those. Old school, we used to use the clickers in sparring all the time, making sure we were punching enough, make our output was high. But it was basic, just like how many punches did you throw that round?
Yeah.
But I mean, still, again, kind of old school.
All right, let's go rapid fire because we're out at 12:30. What do you got next?
Next question. Four Corners Boxing asks, what was the Canelo Algieri sparring like way back when?
Wow. I heard you mention this on the Tris Dixon pod. I learned a lot about you from the Tris Dixon pod, by the way. Tell us about you sparring Canelo.
That was an excellent pod, by the way. I can send it to you. I got it on video. I got three of the rounds. We sparred 2 days, two sessions back to back. And let's just say that it was when he was getting ready for the Cotto fight, and then when he was going to fight Mayweather, and a lot of people predicted him to beat Mayweather, I said, nope. He didn't want to box. He didn't like boxers then. He wanted people to stand in front of him. I didn't stand in front of him. So I saw opportunities for Mayweather to give him fits. Wow. And he did.
Wow. I got to see this video. Rule number one, though, isn't that like never, you know, distribute?
Yeah, you don't post. Yeah, I'll show you, but I'm not going
to
post.
I need to see that. Send that in the group chat later. All right, go.
Yep.
Next question. Crovali asks, how much of a chance do you all give Zepeda against Prograis? I'm leaning towards Prograis, but I definitely wouldn't be surprised if Kron pulls it off.
Yeah, close fight. I mean, almost like a 50-50 fight. My edge is probably Prograis. I think he has a little bit more left in the tank, but Zepeda has got power. I mean, look what he did in his last two fights. Knocked out Baranchic, knocked out that Josue Vargas first round.
Mm-hmm.
Grizzled vet, you know, 34, 35 years old, been around. I love this fight. This is probably one of the biggest fights I'm looking forward to on the schedule because the schedule gets a little lean in the next couple of weeks, but that's Thanksgiving weekend. I'm leading Prograis.
I had Zepeda in camp with me for Pacquiao. He's my old sparring mate and a good buddy of mine. I'm leaning towards him. I just think that his angles, his awkwardness, he's been around the block for sure. I think he's got a little bit of extra oomph in him that he can pull it out.
All right, next one.
Next one, Vinny the Chin.
This is a weird one.
Is Anderson Silva's skull too ripe to absorb an overhand right from a 20-year-old?
The way he said that was just – I never heard anyone's like describe a skull as ripe.
You've never met Vinny the Chin or talked to Vinny the Chin. That's why. I know Vinny very well.
Wait, you know this guy?
I know him. I know Vinny the Chin.
All right.
He's a Long Island legend.
Is it Vinny the Chin that used to – the old mobster would walk around in his robe and pajamas? Not that Chin.
Not that Chin. This is a more new age, but he is a legend on Long Island.
Oh wow! I'm a legend on Long Island. I don't know him. I gotta meet up with this Vinny.
He's a little older than you, but he's been around.
All right. So the question is: Anderson Silva's skull too ripe to absorb an overhand right? Yeah, probably. I mean, Margaret Goodman, who does great work, she came out and was really against this fight because obviously, as you get older, your brain gets like smaller and like. You know this, Chris. You take it away.
Yeah. Yeah, and we saw it this weekend with Durrell. You know, a guy we've seen that is normally very durable, and he's fighting a guy who's not really known as a puncher, especially a one-punch guy. You know, 38-year-old brains, 40-year-old brains, 50-year-old brains don't take shots like 20-year-olds do. So, but can Jake land that kind of shot on a legitimate grizzled veteran like Silva? I mean, that's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah,
it's
next week.
It's not... So what's going to happen is it's if he can get
that's
it.
Next week. That's we'll be previewing that fight. There's actually some good fights next week. And Loma's in action. There's a good DAZN fight. Jake Paul. We're going to talk about Jake Paul next week. We got room for one more.
Let's do it. Last question coming in from Two Beers Podcast. What are some solid fights we could see for Xander Zayas next year?
My guys, the Two Beers Podcast, great dudes. Do great work. Go Phillies. They're big Phillies fans. Mm-hmm. The thing with 154 is a lot of the top guys are at PBC. Maybe they'll come out of contracts. But for Zayas, at least for me, is I want to see him against someone that can find a veteran that can give him rounds at this level. Someone that can, you know, maybe offer some resistance back. It's been a lot of one-way traffic for him. But I put a lot of faith in Top Rank in their matchmakers to get Xander Zayas. Because he's the best prospect in boxing.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be the next Puerto Rican New York Parade's star, New York City Parade star, and Top Rank knows that, and they're building him towards that. I was really impressed with his last fight, but yeah, I mean, they're going to build him perfectly. I don't think he's there yet for those top guys at 54, but he still needs some more step up fights.
Yeah, and anyone that can put in with him, that's it's a gradual step up. Like they know what they're doing. Like Jared Anderson's fighting mm-hmm. Jerry Forrest. On that,
good, yeah, good
that's
fight.
A good see. That to me is
that's
like
a good step up.
Like the hardcores will understand that. The casual fan
that's
might not.
It's a tough
get
fight.
It's a tough fight. Jerry Forrest is very
Jerry
good.
Jerry Forrest is tough.
But that's like yeah. the right matchmaking. That's like beautiful matchmaking that Top Rank does. So he's in good hands, Zayas. So I'm confident that they'll give him that. All right, it's 12:30. We're out. This is a fun one. We got a lot of good stuff, a lot of good questions, top five movies. This was a really good one. A little audio problems early. We'll get those ironed out. Next week, Chris, we're talking Jake Paul. You said the Jake Paul train is going to get derailed.
I'm still sticking to it. I'm still sticking to it.
That's next week. Appreciate the time. As always, keep your hands up. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We out.